Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. We have lots coming up in today's show, but we start out with news from around the citrus industry today.
My Ag Life in Citrus is brought to you by Soil and Crop Incorporated, your number one resource for sustainable crop nutrition by putting nature to work for you.
Fresh Plaza is reporting that Florida orange growers are, quote, cautiously optimistic as they prepare to harvest the first fruits of the season. The 2020-2021 orange harvest topped out at 52.8 million boxes. That's down from 67.4 million boxes the year before. Florida Citrus Commission Chairman Steve Johnson told Fresh Plaza, grove conditions are encouraging for the upcoming season, even though 2020-2021 marked one of the lowest harvests in recent memory. Meanwhile, USDA will issue its first outlook for the coming season later this month. Problems for the citrus industry in South Africa. Eurofruit reports the situation at South Africa's ports has become so bad that the citrus industry has said that the Transnet organization is, quote, perhaps the biggest threat to the country's citrus industry. Operations at the Port Authority and Terminals Division of Transnet have declined so severely that the citrus industry is now witnessing massive delays to ships calling at the country's ports. California citrus growers are invited to a series of informational annual meetings from California Citrus Mutual. CCM staff will give an update on state and federal issues and legislation affecting growers in the state. The event is open to CCM grower members and association members. The meetings are October 26th in Exeter and October 28th in Bakersfield. There will also be a virtual meeting on November 2nd. You can find more information on the California Citrus Mutual website. As families continue to settle into the 2021-2022 school year, the Bee Sweet Citrus team reports an ample supply of versatile citrus varieties to meet the demands of the back-to-school season. Bee Sweet says all of their offshore product undergoes a thorough quality control procedure before it's shipped to customers. And this year, they're touting new high-graphic packaging, allowing customers to select from various bag or bulk options. That's our check-in on the citrus industry today. News from the rest of the agriculture industry is coming up right after this. We'll be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236. Or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you. Does your crop have iron chlorosis? AgroPlantae has a solution for you. Traditionally, chelated iron has limitations that AgroPlantae's Iron Force does not. Iron Force, with its EDDHA chelation technology, can turn your plant's iron chlorosis from yellow to green in as little as 15 days, despite unbalanced soil pH and calcareous soils. From organic certified to conventional micronutrients, AgroPlantae has the product for you. Call 559-498-0388 or visit us at www.agroplantae.com.
Welcome back. Here's your news for today. AMPI, the Associated Milk Producers, Inc., believes the federal milk marketing order needs a thorough review. Speaking during last week's World Dairy Expo, AMPI's Sarah Smith says it's time to look at the entirety of the federal milk marketing order.
We can't make one-off changes that unravel the whole system. So the dairy farmers of AMPI believe we need to take a whole look at the federal order, what works, what doesn't. For example, the manufacturing costs of producing a pound of cheese have changed dramatically, even in the last 6 months for that matter, let alone the last 20 years. And that's the last time that element of the federal order was updated.
She says the industry is working with dated information, and that's not good for dairy farmers.
AMPI does believe that we need to move towards full-scale federal order reform, and we have opportunity to do so. In the upper Midwest, the vast majority of our milk goes to cheese, and so we're most concerned with what impacts the Class 3 formula. Those are things like that cheese manufacturing cost, and it makes a real difference on dairy farms.
AMPI would like to see a hearing that goes through every part of the order.
Yes, that's the best way we can really take that opportunity. A full-scale federal order hearing is a big event. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of people. Let's get it right. Not an emergency order hearing for one piece of the federal order. We need to really take this opportunity to look at the whole thing and come out better on the other side.
AMPI is the largest cheese cooperative in the United States. The United Nations World Food Summit set some ambitious goals for hunger reduction and sustainable production. Gary Crawford has more.
This is a pivotal time for agriculture in the U.S. and around the globe.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack has made that statement numerous times over the last 6 months in reference to the new emphasis on climate-smart farming and sustainable agricultural production. In this case, he said it a few days ago during the United Nations World Food Summit meeting in New York. There were representatives taking part from over 150 countries, both in person and virtually, people from all fields of endeavor.
In this summit, we found something quite remarkable.
UN Deputy Secretary General Amina J. Mohammed telling reporters,
we found that through the sustainable food production systems, it is possible to feed a growing population while protecting our planet.
And those, she says, are the overall major goals of a worldwide effort.
Certainly the U.S. is in sync with the UN goals.
And Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told reporters first,
in the United States, we're focused on ending hunger and building back better our food systems here and abroad so that they are more sustainable, more resilient, and more inclusive, and more equitable.
And again, not just in the U.S., though, but everywhere. The Deputy Secretary General was very frank, though, about this effort to end hunger and improve food production.
It will require a huge response from the international community on funding.
To that end, Tom Vilsack said the U.S. is committing $10 billion over the next 5 years.
$5 billion of it will be focused domestically on a more inclusive food system, focused on providing assistance and help to our most vulnerable citizens, women in agriculture and underserved producers, and focusing on greater resiliency in supporting local and regional supply chains and making sure that we have a system that can serve throughout major disruptions.
Vilsack said the other $5 billion will be focused internationally.
Trying to achieve the goal of reducing poverty by 20%. This will focus primarily on food systems, increasing funding for food security and agricultural production, more equity financing, political risk insurance to advance storage, processing, shipping, increased capacity in developing countries, looking for financing as well to expand nutrition access in low and middle income countries, food fortification.
And reducing food waste. Vilsack said in many countries, fully a third of the food that farmers produce never makes it to consumers because of the lack of proper handling and storage facilities. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai and the Biden administration will be pushing China to meet its commitments in the Phase 1 trade deal that it signed with the United States. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says it's important that the ambassador press China to meet its obligations.
As you know, there are two general aspects to Phase 1. One in which the Chinese made agreements or promised to take 57 steps, if you will, focused on sanitary and phytosanitary, non-tariff related issues that impact and affect trade. The Chinese were pretty aggressive at the outset with the Phase 1 agreement in terms of compliance. They met roughly 50 of the 57 items that they agreed, but there are seven still very large items that have yet to be resolved and yet to be completed by the Chinese, not the least of which is biotechnology trait approvals.
He says China is also well behind in purchasing U.S. ag commodities.
While it's true that the Chinese obviously have made significant purchases recently, now just getting back and perhaps just a bit above where they were prior to the trade war, the reality is that they're still about $5 billion short of the amount of purchasing under Phase 1 that they agreed to make. And that, I think, is important that we again continue to press the Chinese for compliance with Phase 1. If you reach an agreement, we want to make sure that there's a performance behind that agreement.
No matter what steps the administration takes with China, Vilsack says it's important to do no harm to American farmers, ranchers, and businesses.
there are obviously industries that have been impacted and affected, and consumers in the United States who have been impacted and affected by some of the tariffs that have been assessed. And I think it's important for us to take a strategic look, if you will, at the tariffs to make sure that what we're doing isn't necessarily being harmful to American business or to American consumers, but is sending the appropriate message to our Chinese friends. I think it's a combination of basically you've got to live up to the agreement you've reached and a recalibration in terms of the actions that were taken the previous administration to make sure that we're not inadvertently harming our own businesses and our own consumers.
While China has been a good customer for American agriculture, the U.S. must continue to find other steady buyers of American commodities.
In terms of Ambassador Tai's characterization, I think it's fair to say that American agriculture has obviously benefited from the purchases being made by China, and that a lot of work and effort went into establishing relationships in China. Having said that, I think it is important that we continue to look for ways in which we can diversify our efforts. Certainly appreciate recent efforts in Vietnam, where tariffs have come down on certain ag products, where certain sanitary and phytosanitary barriers have been negotiated away so that trade with that country becomes a little bit easier.
Meanwhile, the Agriculture Secretary recently shared his thoughts on what is needed in the present and future regarding wildfire prevention and mitigation. Rod Bain has that story.
While the U.S. Forest Service Chief Wednesday testified on Capitol Hill on increasing wildfire threats, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack also discussed this growing problem during a speech in Colorado.
Overstock forest and dry conditions linked to climate change are a difficult combination, and it means that we're going to continue to see difficult fire seasons in the future unless we act and act now.
The secretary notes the importance and scope of treatments in our nation's forests in curbing wildfire activity, both now and in the future.
We have to more than triple the number of acres we treat annually,
as well as developing new markets and products for wood and timber as a fuel reduction strategy. Secretary Vilsack adds other investments, such as the recently announced Climate Partnership Initiative, will play a role in wildfire risk reduction and response, as well as
reforestation, watershed restoration, and infrastructure maintenance.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Many wheat farmers looking to the next growing season are looking at full-spectrum production systems to control diseases and offer additional crop health benefits. Chad Smith has more.
Carl Johnson is a UPL sales representative in South Dakota. He talks about what herbicide strategies farmers should be looking at to get ready for their next wheat crop.
With those fields that were maybe a little bit drought-stricken, we saw some weeds coming through those spots that maybe were thin, dried out. We need to think about that going into the fall. Is how are we going to prepare for that? Because we're probably going to have a little bit higher weed pressure than we normally have seen in the past. So what we really like to recommend is the growers get in those fields, do a good burn down. And then as they're going with that burn down, add prepare herbicide to that for the residual control of those grasses, and more specifically, brome grass seems to be an issue. So we really like to see that prepare down in the fall, right along with their burn down application timing.
He talks about how a burn down application should factor into a grower's overall herbicide plan.
The application of a burn down is really, really important to clean that field up as we plant winter wheat and keep that field clean. Once you can get into that field and you're planting and you can clean off any weeds that are there, it's just less competition on that crop coming into the spring. So a good burn down is so essential to a good stand. That just equates back into yield. And we can do that in sequential application with the prepare herbicide and use that product for residual that'll carry us into the spring. And then when spring rolls around, we like to follow up with either Everest or Battalion. Everest is our lead product in wheat, and it's a broad spectrum product that controls not only those tough to kill grasses, but along with broadleaves and the brome grasses as well. Now we've got another solution in there we've added, and it's a brand new product. It's called Battalion. That product is basically a one pass program. It brings three modes of action together, not only for a one pass weed control, but also saving the grower time and money in the field.
A burn down application doesn't mean a lot of additional costs for growers.
Typically, no. What we really see is limiting that weed competition, putting less stress on that crop, keeping that crop as stress-free as we can, keeping those fields clean, really adds to the overall yield of that particular crop. And when you can limit the competition that that crop has to go against in the spring of the year, a burn down application is so essential. And having a good burn down, getting that field clean, planting into a clean field, getting a good emergence, all equals to higher yield.
Again, that's Carl Johnson of UPL. Chad Smith reporting.
That's your news for today. We will be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Welcome back. The Crop Consultant Conference was held recently at the Visalia Convention Center. One of the speakers was Mark Bola, Strawberry and Caneberry Cooperative Extension Farm Advisor. He talked about managing fusarium in strawberries. Here is part of that presentation.
Now, where does fusarium in strawberry come from? This has been a bit of a discussion in our industry. One of the things is that the appearance could possibly coincide with the discontinuation of metformin, which took place in 2016. And since then, the fusarium has really picked up. And certainly, we did see that in Southern California as well. The second is, some people say that it came from the nurseries, and it continues to come from the nurseries. I disagree with that assessment because the information that we have does not support that. Fusarium oxys from worm species has not been found in nursery plants. So when people talk about that, they think it is because you go to a field and all of a sudden you have so much disease all at once in the field. It's like, well, it must be coming from plants. Some things that go against that, we tend to see more in organic fields. But the other thing is, too, you need to understand that there may be sublethal populations of Fusarium oxys from Forma specialis building up, and then they come to, once they come to having a certain population level, now it starts to bring down plants and see it all over all at the same time. Okay, so let's get now into the management of Fusarium oxys from Forma specialis. Let's talk sanitation, fumigation, plant resistance. I'm going to mention a little bit of fungicide use and then go to crop rotation. So first of all, let's talk about sanitation. This is a big one. I mean, this is something simple that growers can do to try and mitigate and minimize the chances that they get this in their own field. The late Tom Burr of UC Davis, he's a plant pathologist at UC Davis, he did just a few years ago, he did a wonderful piece of work with his graduate students looking at how fusarium can move around. And we have here, we've got, you see a boot all full of dirt. Can you move fusarium around on mud and dirt on boots? Oh, yes, you can. That was one finding, and then the other is you can certainly move it around on tractors and implements. You look at this, this is a rather large tine from a ripper. It's got a lot of soil on it. You know, this field is contaminated, a grower takes it or loans his tractor to his neighbor where the field is not contaminated. What do you got? About 2 kilograms of soil on there. It's completely contaminated, and not only are you digging in, but you're digging in deep, spreading it all around. I use this example, everybody's talking about vaccines and shots and everything these days. You would be all kinds of surprised if you were getting your vaccine or whatever and they took the needle out of the arm of your neighbor and then without cleaning it or anything, just stuck it and the, you know, pull up a little bit more vaccine stuck in your arm. You'd be like, this is crazy. Well, if you're sharing trackers without cleaning them between fields, you're doing exactly the same thing. And for the Ripper, you're digging in and buried deep. So watch what you're moving around. And I know in Starbase, a lot of people use contractors for traction. Clean it up before it comes in the field. Sometimes they come in from a vegetable field that is in rotational Starbase. You don't even see the fusarium, but it hasn't. And now it's moving it into your field. So clean up the equipment. This is not 10 years ago, this is now. Okay, let's talk a little bit about fumigation. We've got fumigation, crop termination, 2019-2020 study. Peter and I did work 2 and 3 years ago as well, different ones, but this is the culmination of this work. And so fumigation took place 2019, and then we followed it through 2020. Excellent collaboration with the grower, and then also Trical, who did the fumigation for us. Everybody did a really nice job. It's nice to work with a capable team like this. So what are the questions that we're taking on here? It's gonna be three. One, is it worth to fumigate when using resistant plants? We'll talk a little bit about resistant varieties. There's some resistance to fusarium and strawberry. Two, what's the general efficacy of crop termination? I'll tell you what crop termination is shortly. With using KPM for Dominus. And then how about if we combine crop termination with corn picker? Do we get some sort of advantage of doing that? So the test is, again, looking at efficacy of these various fumigants and combinations. I'll talk about treatments, dates, and rates. Then we'll do graphical presentation of results. And then on the final part of this fumigation section, we'll do some pictorial presentation as well. So here's the treatments. KPAM CT. CT stands for crop termination. Crop termination, very briefly, is the idea that you're killing the crop before you incorporate it. And in the case of fusarium and strawberry, this is very important. It's understood that 80% of the disease load of fusarium in the field is in the crown of the plant. If we can get to that disease in the crown of the plant, we can get a lot of control. So if we put fumigant in our drip tape, after we've done less harvest, the crop is still alive, it's still warm enough, plant imbibes, the fumigant kills the plant, but also kills the fungus that's along for the ride. And we should point out, because this happens very quickly, if it's warm enough, it's 2-3 days, plant dead. Someone was saying, you know, maybe we should do this with herbicides. No, you can't. And that was actually done with Roundup. Trying to do crop termination takes too long. Not saying that fungi are like people, but the thing is, when the plant is dying so slowly, somehow the fungus senses it, produces a lot of spores, produces a lot of overwintering structure, essentially lowering the life loads and getting away. Well, when you do crop termination, in theory, you'll get to see yourself how well this works, is you're not allowing that to happen. So both KPAM and Dominus reduces crop termination. Then we have Trichlor 80, 350 pounds per acre for lat. And then KPAM applied as drip after another fumigation. So here's the applications themselves. Dominus used as crop termination. My understanding is Dominus is getting very close to being registered in California. That's good news. Great going is Cygro. KPAM, let's remember KPAM is methane potassium. I've not mentioned that. KPAM crop termination, and then followed by KPAM drip. KPAM crop termination, then Trichlor 80. Flat. KPAM crop termination on its own, Trichlor 80 on its own, and of course the untreated control to see how good we're doing with all of the stuff. So on top of this, we included several varieties. These are extant varieties from the University of California. And so San Andreas, that's day neutral, fusarium resistant, Monterey, fusarium susceptible, and then Fronteras, fusarium resistant. I would say it's not resistant to San Andreas, but nevertheless known to be a fusarium resistant variety.
We have more right after this.
AgroMiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, AgroMiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, AgroMiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today. The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow.
Welcome back. We continue now with the session on managing fusarium from the recent Crop Consultant Conference.
So let's look first at the front terrace. Let's just go to the totals. And you can see here the totals we got. All of the fumigated plots yield statistically higher amounts of fruit than the untreated control, and in most cases, double. Let's go to Monterey, which is a susceptible variety. And look at the first half. First half is up to the end of June. And looking good. All fumigated plots are superior statistically to the untreated control. Second half, not the case. Second half, only the plots that were treated with trichlor, 80. Here we got 1,700 boxes in the second half. So this is end of June through the end of August. I believe it includes a little bit of September. And then where we did the crop termination, trichlor 80, we got 3,200 boxes, almost double. Statistically the same, but almost double. And then way superior to the untreated control, the other fumigated plots. And so in your totals, because the second half was such a disaster, in your totals, it was only the chlorpyrifos treated plots that are statistically superior to untreated control. Let's have a look at a picture at this point. So trichlor 80, that's on you're looking at your left. You can see plants are producing, but they're a little laggy, even though there's a lot of brown in there. But if you look at the right, where we did crop termination followed by trichlor 80, plants are green and are thriving. San Andreas, again, very similar results to what you had with the front terrace. Again, all of the fumigated plots are superior to the untreated control. Not quite as dramatic a difference, but nevertheless statistically superior. So the fumigants are adding a lot here. Cumulative yield summary, you can look at this. These are graphs that Peter prepared. And again, front terrace right here, you've got all of the fumigated plots are superior to untreated control. Same case with San Andreas, and only with the Monterey was the chlorpyrifos superior to everything else. How about when we look at K-Pan crop termination versus dominus crop termination? Is there any difference? You can see here the lines totally overlap. This is two better than one. K-Pan crop termination followed by K-Pan bed, or just K-Pan crop termination on its own. Again, the lines totally overlap. And how about crop termination? Does it improve broadcast of chlorpyrifos? I think we saw that already in the numerical charts. Now you can see it graphically. And here's with your Monterey susceptible varieties. Yes, it does. And then also with San Andreas, it separates out. And you can see in both of these cases, July and August, where the things really start to separate out. Okay, let's look at some pictures. Blue from Monterey, yellow from front terrace, pink and surrounding field is San Andreas. So here we got blue plants. This is trichlor on its own. This is mid-September. And again, you saw that in the other pictures. Kind of doing okay. It's still producing, but not on its best legs. K-Pan crop termination followed by trichlor. It's black, yellow. That's front terrace. Again, front terrace is a short day variety, so it's not going to have a lot of fruit. And at this point, right, mid-September, but still, you can see the plant is completely unaffected by any sort of pathogen. Untreated control, that's the one here in the middle of the picture, right here. You see it? There's not anything alive in it. It's just totally wiped out. K-Pan crop termination, blue flag, Monterey, not doing good. And then K-Pan crop termination, then K-Pan drip. And you can see back there, we've got, that's again, blue flags, a little bit of green. I guess I could have gotten closer, huh? And then dominus crop termination, this is with San Andreas, pink flags. Looks good, you know, not super great, but looks good. Conclusion, what do we get to these three questions I asked? Yes, It is worth it to fumigate even though you're using a resistant variety. Two, crop termination works to improve yields and resistant varieties through the season and in the first half of the season of susceptible varieties. And then third, crop termination very much looked like it enhances floor picker efficacy in the susceptible varieties. And you saw that big jump, it's almost doubled. So looking very good. Okay, so let's talk about genetic resistance. I mentioned this, so two of our varieties in our trial, San Andreas, Fronteras resistant. It does make a difference. Here we have a field, you can see these dead spots, both of those, you know, blue flies, Monterey, the rest of the field is San Andreas. Same fumigation treatment, I believe this was K-PAM crop termination, and so it does make a difference. And so what do we have so far? Resistant varieties, the ones we have going right now, San Andreas, Fronteras, Moxie, and Royal Royce, those are two recent releases from the UC program under Dr. Steve Mann. And a lot of the proprietary varieties have resistance as well. We do see the UC program moving towards fusarium resistance as it goes forward also. So this is going to become very much part of our picture with growing strawberries on the Central Coast with all of this fusarium around. Crop rotation, before I get into the crop rotation issue, I just want to mention about fungicides. The use of the foliar fungicides you have things like Pristine, things like Bound, maybe Captan, whatever, you know, is it possible to inject it through the tape and then obtain control of fusarium? You know, some people make sense because of their fungicides. I've never seen any of that work. I've actually done a little bit of that. And of course, then you have all of your biologicals as well. Being injected through the tape, things like double nickel, and then I've worked with that also. I have yet to see anything work. And I think one of the issues is, the big one is that soil is such a different medium that, you know, just spraying it on the leaf. It's very difficult to have that fungicide get in contact with the fusarium. And again, the volume of soil that you have to distribute is pretty significant, not to mention some of the mechanics of getting it through the tape. So I've not seen anything yet. I know people would really like to have something happen. I'm in constant communication with the chemical companies on this issue, and I do have their attention. And we are working on it, but we don't have anything yet. Crop rotation, minimum crop rotation is 18 months. It's better if it's more. 18 months is pretty minimal. 3 years, 4 years, if you can do it. And do recognize, again, going back to the beginning of my talk, do recognize that even though it's not thriving on these other crops, it is growing. So it goes down very slowly, and that's why the longer the crop rotation, the better. So in conclusion, wilt disease in strawberry caused by the pathogen Fusarium oxysprom form species Fragaria is expanding quickly and merits attention. And then second, it is important to take note of what is happening in the field, take the necessary steps to manage it through a program of integrated pest management. So that concludes my talk, and I thank you for your attention.
I recently wrote an article on the issue for Organic Farmer Magazine. You can find it on the magazine's website. That's our show for today. If you have a topic you'd like to hear more about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. From the JCS Marketing Team, thanks for listening.